Isn't that true of all of us? How much we need the Lord. I was thinking this morning, I didn't get in here in time for the singing of your song of the month. But as we were singing it this morning, and as I was listening to the words, I was thinking of that very truth, how much we need the Lord. If we didn't have the Lord, what could we have? I think of the world's people. I don't know how the world's people get the courage to get up and face the day. They don't have a thing to go on, do they? Not a thing. And yet the multitudes of people, we know that that doesn't seem to matter. And what am I looking for? I thought I had a book in here. Well, I guess I did. I won't, that's fine. We're all set. But I thought I had brought it. I didn't. And anyway, but with the Lord's people, everything doesn't always go our way, does it? Everything isn't always pleasant. Everything isn't always fun. But we have the Lord, and we can trust Him. We can trust Him. I appreciated a comment. Actually, Steve came into my office before the morning, before the evening service started. And he said, you know, from your message this morning, he said, it's obvious it's been a long time since you've been out in the workforce. And he said, the reason I say that is because in today's workforce, nobody cares. Nobody is concerned if the management is watching them or not. They do their own thing. They don't care. They're just there. And I said, you're right, it has been a long time since I've been in the workforce. But what a society we live in. There is total disrespect for those in authority. I will do my own thing, and it doesn't matter whether you like it or not. And I appreciated the comment, and I suggested to him, when our conversation was done, I said, boy, that certainly sheds light on the responsibility of the Christian, doesn't it? Living in a world that's the mentality, it's just that much greater responsibility to us. We do what we're supposed to, and I said, humanly speaking, here's the problem. We know we do this as unto the Lord, but humanly speaking, it bothers us when we're giving our all and we're doing our best and we're giving that honest day's work and we're doing what we know the Lord wants us to do and we are passed up for the promotions and we watch them go to those who couldn't care less and don't do 15 cents worth of work in a day's time. And you watch them get rewarded for their slothfulness. And that's where we have to talk to the Lord about it, isn't it? That's where we have to say, Lord, it doesn't matter whether I get recognition. We're not doing this for the praise of man, but we do what we're supposed to do for you. I don't care where we're at, as I think of the group here this evening. And I know a good number of you do have jobs, and you do have responsibilities. And for the Christian, we have a whole different set of work ethics, don't we? And let's just pray for one another, as even Paul was encouraging in that passage this morning. Pray for one another that God would help our people to be faithful in their tasks, and that the Lord would get the glory for it, whether anybody else is pleased or not. We need to pray that each of us would have the right attitudes and be able to give those honest days work. Well, let's look to the Lord in prayer, shall we? Thank you, Father, that we can be here tonight. Thank you that you made it possible for each of these, and I do thank you for your word. And I pray, Father, that you would get the glory as we look at a passage of truth, as we think about the privilege of serving you. I pray that you might speak to our hearts. I pray that there might be somebody who needs the encouragement of your word tonight, that you would be able to speak to them. You know our hearts, and we just commit this to you, and we'll thank you in your name. Take your Bibles and turn, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. I would imagine that there are some that are sitting here that are thinking or have thought from time to time, boy, I sure would like to be able to do something for the Lord. I'm not going to ask for anybody to raise your hands, but I'm thinking there's probably some that have said, you know, that's me, Pastor. I have over the years, I've just poured my heart out to the Lord. Lord, I want to serve you. I just wish I knew what I could do. And it just seems as though I make myself available, but it just doesn't seem that. And oftentimes we find there are those thoughts that begin to fill our hearts. Where do those thoughts come from? You know, I'd really like to serve the Lord, but you know, God wouldn't use someone like me. You know, to be able to be used for the Lord, you got to have that special personality. You got to have those special abilities. Maybe you have to have that special education. And, you know, I just don't have any. There's nothing special about me. And, you know, I want to serve the Lord, but I just don't think probably there's anything I could do for him that would really matter and really count. Well, I want us to look at this passage this evening, some familiar verses in verses 26 through 29. And Andrew, if you want to jot this down, the title for this one is God's Choices. God's Choices. What kind of people does the Lord use? What kind of person is the Lord looking for? Who does he select? Who does he reject? Well, I want us to look at some things, just a few thoughts in these verses, these 26, 27, 28, 29. Let's look at them first, and then we'll go back and make some observations that I trust will be a blessing to you. Beginning in verse 26 of 1 Corinthians 1, "For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound or confuse the wise. And God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And base or lowly things of the world, and things which are despised, hath God chosen. Yea, and things which are not, to bring to nothing things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. As we think about God's choices, the first thing I want us to notice in verse 26 is the fact that we see that God's choices actually involve a rejection of what we would select. God's choices involve a rejection of what we would select. You say, what do you mean by that, Pastor? I think each and every one of us, we notice here in verse 26, he says, how that you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise, not many wise men after the flesh. Well, as we stop and think about, I think humanly speaking, we would say, well, that seems like, first of all, that would be one of the important factors that God would be looking for. Someone who is wise after the flesh. Someone that is looked up to. Someone the world looks up to. Someone the world goes to for wisdom. And there are people like that, aren't there? There are people that are much wiser than I. They have much more knowledge. And remember, we were reminded this morning that the difference between knowledge and wisdom is knowledge is just the awareness and the understanding of the truth or the facts, where wisdom is to know how to use that knowledge and those facts that you know. That's what true wisdom is. And as we look at those that are in the world's spotlight, as we listen to the media, we watch them, there's a lot of people that are looked at as wise people in the eyes of the world, right or wrong. There's a lot of wise people. And you know, we might think, boy, it'd really be something. It'd really be something if the Lord could get a hold of someone's heart like that. Boy, God would have something if the Lord can get a hold of them. The Lord could, if he wanted to, he could select them. But you see, that's not really the kind that the Lord is normally looking for. Notice Paul did not say that God does not use or choose any wise men according to the flesh. Sometimes God uses some brilliant, and there have been some brilliant ones in church history and the history of the church, outstanding individuals, educational, academic-wise, and so on. But it says he doesn't use many. He doesn't choose M-A-N-Y. That's not usually the ones he's looking for. Well, what about here? What about the next thing? What about the mighty? And there again, there are some that God has chosen that are mighty, but not many. What about noble? What's that? That would be those of perhaps some outstanding heritage. Those whose name means something. You mentioned such and such a last name. Oh, yeah. You know, that family, that's some name that has been known for generations. And does God? But you know, God isn't, as he selects his choices, for the most part, he rejects the ones that we would select because we would think, well, I would think God would be looking for the wise one, the mighty one, and the one who has a name that raises eyebrows. You know, they come of, there's noble blood coursing in their veins. The family heritage. Why doesn't God use many of the above? Anybody give a... I wonder why it is that God doesn't usually select those wise after the flesh, or mighty, or known for their strength, or even because of maybe the posterity of their family name. What's wrong with them? Well, the reason God doesn't choose many of them is because most of them are too hung up on themselves to even give God a chance. Right or wrong? As we think about those in the spotlight of the media, those, we know there's wise ones, mighty ones, noble ones, but they're so caught up in their own world. They are so proud of themselves. They have no interest in the things of the Lord. And so we see that Paul said, you see your calling, brethren. Not many of you were mighty. Not many of you were wise according to the flesh. Not you were noble. But we see here, when God chooses, he rejects the very ones that we would select. And according to verses 27 and 28, number 2, he selects the ones we would reject. Let's look at 27 and 28. Paul says, but God hath chosen. What? What kind of things or what kind of personalities? He says, first of all, God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound or confuse, or to, let's bring it down to our lingo, to blow the minds of the wise. God chooses foolish things to cause the wise people to scratch their heads in disbelief. And I don't understand how this one can be in the position that they're in. They're in the position they're in because God has chosen them. Because God rejects the ones that we would select, and he selects the ones that we would reject. So as we look at his choices, and Paul is actually telling us here the list now of verse 27, God hath chosen. Now we're looking at the record. Here's the list of the things or the individuals that God has chosen. And we saw, first off, he chose foolish things as far as the world is concerned. And he does that to just blow the minds of the wise. God has chosen here the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. Now, back in verse 26, we would have thought God would have selected the mighty. But Paul says, no. God selected the weak things to confound these mighty ones. These that you look at and, humanly speaking, people would say, there's no way God could ever use that individual in this given situation. Guess what? That's the kind God likes to use. He uses, it says, the base things of the world, and that's those lowly things. Base things are, we would say, those meaningless, those things that have no real attraction, no real worth in the minds of the people. That's the ones that God uses. And he uses and chooses, verse 28, things which are despised. Despised things. The world wants nothing to do with this. The world says, get out of here. I don't want any part of that. And you know what God says? That's the one I want to choose. That's the one I'll choose. And that's the one I'll use. And then he says, yes, and things which are not, to bring to nothing things that are. This, what he's saying here, God chooses those things which are not considered anything by men. Mankind wouldn't even give them a second thought. If here's this job to be done, and here's this position to be filled, the world wouldn't even give that person or that thing a second thought, because it's nothing, it's meaningless. There is no future in this. There is no potential in that one. And the Lord says, that's the very important thing. God says, that's the one I want to use. The story has been told, and I know I told it years ago, of a famous sculptor. How many of you have ever heard of the sculptor Michelangelo? Well, yeah, we all have. It is said that one day Michelangelo passed a pile of rejected, good-for-nothing stones that had been piled off to the side out of a stone quarry. The owner of the quarry had determined that these stones are worthless. There is no potential whatsoever. As Michelangelo stood there looking at that rejected pile of stones, it is said that one particular stone caught his eye. He stopped and he stood there and he studied it for a very long time. The person asked him what he was doing, and his response was, "I want that stone." And the answer that came back to him was, "That stone is no good." But he took it, and it's said that he carved one of his most famous sculptures on that particular stone that everybody else had rejected and saw no future in. That's the way it is when God makes choices. For you see, Paul told us and taught us, not only does God reject the ones that we would select, God, like Michelangelo, selects individuals and things that we would reject. Let's take a look at some of God's work in lives and how that God can take the foolish and has great use out of it. You say, well, give me an example. Here's an example. How many of you ever heard the story of David and Goliath? There was a king and his whole army, military men. Some of you men have been in the military. You've been trained. You know exactly what to do. You did at the time. And that king and those military men were shivering in their tents at the thought of engaging this one man in battle. And that one man stood out there and he defied the armies of the Lord and he mocked the God of Israel. And there was a little shepherd boy that came into camp. His father had sent him with some supplies for his three older brothers who happened to be in that terrified army. We know the story, don't we? How could that be? It's because God made a choice of this young man. A young man that chose to trust not himself, but he chose to trust the Lord. And he said, by God's help, I'm going to have your head. The giant said, come here, and I'll give your flesh to the birds. And David looked up at that over 9 foot tall man and he said, God helping me, I'm going to cut your head off. Who won? We know the story. That's the example of God choosing the weak, the base, What about the despised? God selects, God at times chooses those things which are despised. Have you ever known a tax collector to have a good reputation and to be someone who is highly sought after and those poor people, you know, by virtue of their employment that they choose, they get a bad rap, don't they? Tax collectors. Who'd want to use one of them? The Lord did. And he selected one of those men to be one of his 12 disciples. And the man's name was Matthew. He was a hated tax collector. He was despised in the eyes of the society that he operated in. But the Lord said, I'd like you to be one of my disciples. I think about the nothings, the nobodies. As it says, God has chosen those things which are not, that are not, that have nothing in the eyes of the world, to bring to nothing things that are in the eyes of the world. Matthew was just one of the Lord's 12 disciples that was a nobody, and the Lord chose him. The bulk of them were what? Fishermen. Now there's a bunch for you, isn't it? You know, if you're going to select a group of people that you can rely on, count on, and I hate to say it, I'm a fisherman, I enjoy it, but you know, I know over the years those fishermen have gotten bad raps. Their profession stinks. Don't you agree? They get up, go out, fish all day, come home. Just think how nice it is for the wife or her stinking husband to come home, smelling like those smelly fish. The language. I think probably the closest thing I would compare the fisherman's language to would be a truck driver. Doug, you used to work for Penske, didn't you? You were around a lot of truck drivers. How was their language? Exemplary? No. You know, there's something about it. You know, it makes your ears burn. I think of young people here, they can't remember. We don't have very many young people, but we remember, those of us in my age, we remember the invention of the CB radios in vehicles, in trucks. And I'm telling you, the language that these truck drivers would communicate back and forth, it'd burn your ears off. Well, I think fishermen are the same way. What do they care? They're just out there, they're just a bunch of good old boys. But you know, the Lord said, I want you and you and you and you and you. Leave your nets, leave your fish boat there, and I want you to be one of my disciples. That's the beauty of this very thing. The kind of choices include not only the people God uses, but the plans he chooses for us and the places that he sends us. And God's choices, as we've seen, many times he rejects what we think would be a good place or a good plan. And instead, he selects what we would say, no, no, not that. And that's what he uses. Thirdly, and last here in verses 27 through 29, let's notice God's choices result in the achievement of what we least expect. The achievement of what we least expect. God, what does he do? He confounds the wise. He confounds the things which are mighty by using the weak. He takes those base things, those individuals that seem like no potential at all, to bring to nothing those that thought they really had some ability and they were really something in men's eyes. As we look at some examples, we think of some of that very thing of how God, in God's choices, you say, give me some examples, Pastor, of bringing to naught those things that are. What chances would you have given 300 men that went up against an army and all they had was a pitcher and a candle inside of it and a trumpet in your hand? That they're going to war. How many of you would have given those 300 men any chance? But they saw God give a great victory. Because God was making the choices, not them. How many of you would have said, as picture yourself in one of the children of Israel, you've just crossed the Jordan River, we've been waiting 40 years to get here, and here's this huge city of Jericho. These huge, high, thick walls. I know how to conquer. Let's just march around the city. And that's what. If somebody would have listened to you, somebody would have said, you're not eating a fruitcake, right? That's not how you get walls to tumble. But God said, this is the method I'm going to choose, and this is how we're going to do it. The key in verse 29, the whole key is in verse 29, that no flesh should glory in his presence. Why does God do the way he does? Why does God choose the ones he chooses? Why does he reject the ones he rejects? Here's why. So that no person will ever be able to glory in his presence and say, you're welcome, God. You're welcome, God. I knew you could use me. I knew you needed my help. It was a pleasure serving you. I wasn't surprised when you called on me. No. That's what it's all about. Here's why he doesn't choose the wise. Because the wise, back in verse 26, that he seldom ever uses, they in their own minds are too wise to look to God for wisdom. Who needs God? What about the mighty? We talk about how that we are to cast our care upon the Lord, and we are to trust in the Lord to accomplish things. But the mighty hears that and they say, I don't need God and his strength. I've got enough strength myself to do it. And that's why God seldom chooses those. And what about the noble? The noble are too great in their minds to humble themselves for God's greatness. Doesn't mean that God, you say, does this mean that God just chooses and uses a bunch of second-rate dummies who can't do anything else? Absolutely not. But what I want us to look at is that when God chooses, most times and most likely, it won't be the things that we would choose. It would probably be something we would refuse, but given half a chance, God can accomplish some tremendous things if we just let Him make the choice. Let's stand and we'll be dismissed in prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time. We thank you for your word. I pray that through even these familiar verses and some reminders from it, that you might be able to minister to our hearts your will, help us to look to you, depend upon you, wait upon you. When you call, help us, Father, be willing to be used whenever, wherever, however you see fit. And thank you for the privilege in your name.